Hello and welcome to Baylor Connections, a conversation series with the people shaping our future. Each week we go in-depth with Baylor leaders, professors, and more, discussing important topics in higher education, student life, and today, research. I'm Derek Smith, and our guest today is Dr. Truel Hyde. Dr. Hyde is Baylor's Vice Provost for Research and is responsible for the direction and development of Baylor's overall research policy. In this role, he works with faculty across campus to encourage and support meaningful research in a variety of fields. In addition to Baylor faculty, Dr. Hyde works with numerous agencies that support research, such as federal and state funding agencies and foundations. And in addition to his role as Vice Provost for Research, he's a Baylor physics professor and director of the Center for Astrophysics, Space Physics, and Engineering Research, better known as CASPER, in the BRIC, a little bit north of campus, the Baylor Research and Innovation Collaborative. Dr. Hyde received his master's and PhD from Baylor and has served the university as a faculty member for 30 years, and he is with us today on the program. Dr. Hyde, thanks so much for your time today. It's great to have you on the program.
Sure, thanks for asking.
Well, you know, research is certainly a topic that is front and center at Baylor right now as we move into Illuminate, Baylor's academic strategic plan for the future. And this research focus is one you had as a faculty member and then since moving into the Vice Provost for Research role. So let's start with the big picture and then we can drill in a little bit. What does it look like to lead the university's research endeavors? What are the issues, sort of large and small, that are on your plate on a daily basis?
Yeah, well, it's nice because my office is ecumenical. What I mean by that is that we support research and scholarship across campus. So I often remind the faculty that I'm not the Vice Provost for Research for just the sciences. I'm the Vice Provost for Research for everyone. And for me, it's a lot of fun in that, you know, I get the opportunity to celebrate with a faculty member once they've just written perhaps the seminal book on Jonathan Edwards or won a Grammy or come up with some new research device that's going to perhaps help people with Parkinson's. All of those things are exciting, and it's an opportunity for me to be involved in some way. In terms of what the office actually does, we're primarily there solely to support our faculty success. And so obviously, as you know, whether you're doing any kind of scholarship that you're doing, for example, if you're writing a book, you're always going to need some sort of support. If you're running a lab, you're probably going to need a lot more support, especially in terms of budgeting and finding external funding. And so that's what my office does. We simply provide the infrastructure necessary for our faculty to be successful in all of those endeavors.
You know, as a physics professor moving into this role, what was most challenging but also most fun of expanding the way you looked at things into learning more about all these different disciplines?
Yeah, well, I guess what was probably maybe the most challenging and the most fun was fixing all the things that I happen to know were broken since I was research active, still am research active. It's just kind of like a dream come true. You're sitting in your office going, well, if I were in charge, I'd fix this, that, and the other thing. And I actually got the opportunity to do some of that. But the expansion or the widening of the scope was not difficult for me at all because I've got a lot of interest in a lot of different fields. I've had a minor in music and a minor in English Lit and some other things of that sort. And so, I'm easily bored. So it was a great fun to get to meet faculty outside of my own discipline and outside of the disciplines that I usually intersected with. And I found to be true what I already knew, which is we have wonderful faculty. They're wonderful scholars. And they're all so, so interesting to meet and discuss, especially in depth, what they are actually doing in terms of their own scholarship.
We are visiting with Dr. Truel Hyde, Baylor's Vice Provost for Research. And Dr. Hyde, we've had President Livingstone on the program talking about the aspirations to become a preeminent Christian research university, which is really front and center, as we talked about with Illuminate. So at this moment, as we head into the expansion of Illuminate, how do those growing research aspirations impact the work you do and your office does?
Well, I got to say, it's exciting to have a president that every time she gets the opportunity talks about becoming an openly Christian R1 university, an unapologetic R1 university. And that's exciting. It's exciting for a variety of reasons. But obviously what it means to us is that we have more opportunity to help our faculty. They come in much more interested in doing research than perhaps they would be otherwise. And all of that is just a wonderful opportunity for us to, again, continue to help our faculty grow.
What about for you personally and some of your colleagues becoming an R1, unapologetically Christian research university? What's most compelling to you about that as a professor, as a scholar, as someone who works with faculty?
Yeah, the short answer is that it's an exciting goal. I can count on the fingers of one hand how many universities would even deign to consider that a goal. There's just not a lot of opportunity out there if you want to go to a university that's unapologetically Christian and also an R1 university. There's not a whole lot of choices. I've often said, and I will continue to say, this is our whole card. This is one of our whole cards. If you've got a faculty member that's a Christian but also values excellence in teaching and values R1 research, we're a pretty good choice. You know, mm-hmm. We're perhaps one of a very few pretty good choices. And so it's exciting. It's exciting to see it develop. It's been exciting to see it develop over the past several years, and it's exciting to see where it will go now.
You mentioned some of the things you do, helping professors navigate through some of the funding and different aspects of their research. But what does it look like? How do you encourage research across faculty, across campus? What are some of the ways you sort of encourage and nurture that meaningful research?
Yeah, it's a lot like teaching, to tell you the truth. We get a lot of, as you already know, you're a Baylor alum. Mm-hmm. We get wonderful teachers. We get wonderful faculty that come in. They've got great ability in the classroom, but they've also got great scholarly agendas. And surprisingly enough, which is true of probably all of us, sometimes they don't realize how good they are. Mm-hmm. They don't really truly realize what they can do. And so one of the fun things that I enjoy doing is going and talking to, for example, oftentimes a new faculty member, sometimes not, but most oftentimes a new faculty member, and simply having the conversation. You need to understand, you're really, really good. You've got a great scholarly agenda. You've got exactly what you need to be very successful in this particular venue. You just need to, you know, have faith in yourself and let us give you a little help, and you'll be surprised what happens. And then to watch that come true and to watch them come back and say, boy, thanks a lot for helping me. That's fun. That's interesting.
How do you work with disciplines across campus to foster interdisciplinary work, or also maybe even to encourage, you know, as you talk about saying you're really, really good, are there ways you can help them hone in, help them pinpoint the best possible project, or is that all something that they do on their own?
Yeah, no, I'm a firm believer in interdisciplinary and international collaborations for a variety of reasons. I think that the most important research, especially in the sciences, but probably across the board as well, nowadays often occurs at the nexus or at the intersection of disciplines. And so as such, that's one reason that, you know, for example, the federal funding agencies are often saying, we'll put money into play, but we want it to be at the intersection of, say, physics and chemistry and biology. So to figure out how to make that work is a little bit interesting. Oftentimes we get faculty that come to campus and they've already been involved in interdisciplinary research. And so they show up on my doorstep saying, you know, I need a chemist, or I need a biologist, or I need somebody to do it. What can I do here? And so that's, you know, shooting fish in a barrel. You go, okay, great. I've got a whole list here of really good faculty that are already here that'd be happy to talk to you. Let me connect you. More interesting, at least in my mind, are the opportunities where you have perhaps faculty members from three or four different departments, and you're looking at them and you go, you know, if you guys worked together, you could actually look at this particular problem that no one of you could look at by themselves. So let's see what that looks like. And so usually, as you would expect, it involves food. You know, mm-hmm. I often say, okay, I'll spring for lunch. If you guys will all come sit in my conference room and let me talk to you about this.
No matter how smart or learned people
right.
are, free food is
free
always.
Free food always works. You know, it's that leftover from starving all the whole time you're a graduate student.
On the way to
student.
A PhD, yes.
You know, so you never pass up free food. And so we'll have that conversation and say, look, you know, let me just tell you about this issue or this problem and let you guys talk about it a little bit. And if that comes out well, if they all seem to be interested, which they most of the time are, I say, well, why don't you do this for me? You know, I'll provide a little bit more free food if you'll just go back and talk about this and see if you can come up with some, you know, something that you might want to work on together. And once they've done that, I'll say, well, okay, why don't you work on it together, do some scholarship, produce a paper. And if they actually do produce a paper and everybody still likes each other and they're all still friends, then we get really serious about, okay, the next step is let's see if we can't find funding to support this initiative. And that's been the mechanism I've used for a long time. I sometimes sweeten the pot a little bit. I have an internal proposal or an internal funding opportunity through my office in which I will offer a postdoctoral slot for people that, again, are in four different disciplines. And I say, okay, pick a postdoc that will be the linchpin that will fit in the midst of all this and connect you guys. And that's worked out well, too. And that's, in fact, how several interdisciplinary centers and institutes have been born through that process.
We are visiting with Dr. Truel Hyde, Baylor's Vice Provost for Research. And for people who might be listening, you know, obviously you research is your career. And for Baylor professors, they come here, like you said, with a very impressive scholarly agenda. But maybe for people who don't spend a lot of time thinking about research, whether they're an alum in a career where research seems far away from what they do, or a member of the Central Texas or Waco community, why should Baylor's growing research portfolio matter to them? What are some of the benefits that, even if research isn't really close to your heart, that you're going to see the benefits from that?
Yeah, I think there's a variety of reasons. For the alums, the obvious reason is that whenever you're an alum of a university, what you want is for that university to continually get better, mm-hmm. because that obviously adds value to your degree. And you want that university to go on and thrive and become successful. And so that's exactly what's happening here. You know, we are continuing to grow and expand and get better and better. And that's as an alum, that's about all you could ever hope for. Now, the added bonus to that is that we're doing it while maintaining the Christian mission. And, you know, if you look at the world, no matter what your political view, I think pretty much all of us could agree that, man, we are in desperate need of a Christian voice on the scene. Mm-hmm. So often conversations occur, whether they be inside the Beltway or at The Hague or wherever, and there's not a Christian voice at that table, or certainly not one that's open. And the reason for that is oftentimes there's not someone that's qualified in terms of the scholarly work that has to be done that's also in the academy, in a Christian school. And so, again, that's one of the reasons that the whole idea of a Christian research university is so important. It's the reason that so many of us are still here and so many new, bright, outstanding young faculty come here. Now, in terms of the local community, if you look at any thriving metropolitan area, in large part, the majority of the time, there's a university someplace that's pushing the underlying infrastructure, the underlying financial health of the unit or the area. And so, again, one of the things, in fact, that, it's been probably 10 years ago now that Waco, maybe more than that, 15 years ago now, that Waco actually commissioned a consulting group to come in and take a look at how would you raise the overall average wage of people within the McLennan County. And one of the first things that came out of that study was you need a research university. You need something that drives the wage up. And so, again, you know, people remembered that. And so that's one of the reasons there was so much support from the community for the idea of Baylor becoming an R1 university.
This is Baylor Connections. We are visiting with Baylor's Vice Provost for Research, Truel Hyde. And Dr. Hyde, you know, obviously the BRIC is something you've been heavily involved in from its conception to now. Tell us a little bit about your role in that, and maybe how does the growth of the BRIC and what we've seen demonstrate some of what you've just talked about, and maybe provide a little bit of a blueprint to follow as we look at those growing research ambitions down the line?
Yeah, well, certainly the BRIC was one of the more exciting times in my career as Vice Provost for Research. The bottom line was, again, driven in part by the study that I just mentioned. When I was first thinking about, well, how do we actually move forward towards becoming a very high research and R1 institution, there were a lot of things that we needed to do that we just hadn't been able to do yet. For example, we needed desperately to have doctoral programs inside the School of Engineering, but we didn't really have the space, the research space in particular, to make that happen, and it was a young school. We needed the ability to bring in more industry funding because federal funding continues to winnow, and so if you're going to be successful as a research entity, then you really need to figure out where you're going to replace that funding with, and one of the places you can do that is through industry. Most industries used to have their own actual research shops, but you know, as things tightened up, they decided they couldn't do that anymore, and now they've suddenly realized, well, they really do need the research, so how do they do that? So they're always interested in talking about that with universities. And then, of course, we needed the ability to establish an intellectual property shop, because we had faculty that were producing intellectual property across the board, and yet we were doing nothing with it. We basically were just, you know, filing a patent, and that was the end of it. And so all of those things, in addition to the fact that we needed workforce development, because it's hard right now, it's still harder to find a good tech on the East Coast than it is to find a PhD in physics, I'm ashamed to say. You know, that piece, plus the fact that you need a full pipeline. If you've got, for example, a new business, a CEO, you're trying to lure a CEO to town, and they're either going to set up another node of an existing business or set up an entirely new business. When they step off the plane and they start looking around, one of the first things they usually ask is, okay, where's my wet lab space or where's my dry lab space? And at the time, we didn't have that. The second thing they usually ask is, okay, this is great if we have the appropriate space, but where's my workforce? And so what's nice about the BRIC is that all of the things that I've just gotten through mentioning, including a relationship that we have through Region 12, which is the regional service center that oversees 76 independent school districts, and Huckabee Incorporated, which is the largest architectural group for K-12 school architecture and building in the state of Texas, and then several entities that are educational entities at Baylor. That gives us the ability to say to that prospective CEO, well, if you're talking about workforce, I can give you anything from the tech on the line through the PhD in the lab. And by the way, I'm also looking at how I continue to prime that pipeline through the first grade through senior year. So all of those things together, when you put them in a building that was given to us through the extreme generosity of Bland Cromwell and Clifton Robinson families, and supported by everybody. Mm-hmm. I mean, supported by Bell Mead and by Waco and by the Bell Mead, the McLennan County Economic Development Group, the Bell Mead Economic Development Group, all the Chambers of Commerce, the Cooper Foundation, you know, just goes, the list goes on and on and on. That was a remarkable, in fact, the Association of University Research Parks, which is the sort of overarching umbrella for research parks, had never seen anything like it. They came down and looked at it and just went, you got to be kidding me. This doesn't happen, because you rarely see that level of support. And so it's nice because, you know, we've been in the building now 6 years. We've got both the electrical engineering program and the mechanical engineering program now have PhD programs. Their research is conducted in the BRIC. We have interdisciplinary international centers in the BRIC. We have industries, you know, six different industries so far that are in the BRIC that are all working with our faculty and staff. You know, we've got the Lex Labs, which is the product of the Huckabee and Region 12 and Baylor collaboration that I mentioned earlier. It's up and running. We've got an incubator accelerator that we're doing really exciting things with right now that's in part spawned what's going on downtown with Hustle. All of those things are starting to really gel, and we're seeing, you know, lots of economic development through these companies that come to the BRIC and then hire people, whether it be our graduate students or our undergraduate students, and actually pay taxes and do all the things that you would want something like that to happen.
Visiting with Dr. Truel Hyde, Baylor's Vice Provost for Research, our guest today on Baylor Connections. Well, what are some examples of that research? You talk about the departments that are doing exciting things. What are some examples? I remember maybe one a couple years ago, I got to interview a professor there who was working on motion capture technology to work with hip replacement patients to determine how they moved with their new hips to best ensure they wouldn't need hip replacement surgery again. And to me, that sort of showed how a technology could really be used by could really benefit the average person. And I know you have a lot of examples like that.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's exactly right. That example is a really good one, because that particular professor has gone on to now he's working with the military. He's working with Army patients from Darnell, who, as you might expect, have got all sorts of problems in addition to hip replacement, because they've been in really, really rough environments. Sure. And so that's going on. We've got we got so many that I could be here a long time, but I'll just mention one. Composites. We've got a composites group led by Dr. David Jack, who's been doing this for a very long time, and he's working with L3 and Berkeley Current and Delta G, all of which are actually in the building now, funding his research. We've come up with some intellectual property that we're now on the process of starting down the path to commercializing. And it's a mechanism for, well, one of the things that he's come up with is the ability to do a non-destructive testing mechanism for composite materials. So what's nice about that is that, for example, if you're struck on the way out in a Boeing 787, which is the front end is a one-piece composite. If you're struck by a bird on the way out on the wing, oftentimes composites show very little to no damage of any sort. And so it would look like you're perfectly fine. But if you actually scan that with this device that Dr. David Jack has come up with, you can determine whether or not, even though it looks okay on the outside, perhaps there is some damage on the inside that you need to deal with. And that's just one of a multitude of ways that you can use this particular device.
And if we really delved into what you all are doing in Casper, we could be here another two or three programs.
Yeah, you're right about that. We got a lot of fun things going on. We got six different research groups, and they're all doing different things, everything from M-theory, string theory, to stuff that's on the space station, to complex plasmas, to, you know, we got a lot of things going on there that's fun as well. And that's a good example of an international interdisciplinary group. So we have faculty from all over the world that come in and spend time with us, or we go there. And we've got faculty from multiple departments. One of the most recent set of papers that we published actually came about because we found a faculty member in the math department that was willing to come over and spend almost a year with us to figure out exactly what we were saying, because we were saying exactly the same thing. It turned out we were just using different lingo. And after we finally figured out how to translate from one another, it spawned a bunch of really interesting, a very, very good PhD and a lot of interesting papers.
That's great. Dr. Hyde, as we head into the final couple moments of the program, we've talked a lot about the community and Baylor faculty, but I want to bring it home to students a little bit. As you think about the research that's taking place and these aspirations as we grow into a preeminent R1 Christian Research University, what does that mean for students, both graduate students but also undergraduate students learning in the classroom?
Sure. Well, it's all about the students. I mean, the most important thing of any university is always the students. They're the people who are going to go off and spread your name and basically be the face of the university in many places where they perhaps have never heard of a Baylor. And the students, especially in any field, but especially in the sciences, for example, let's just take one, pre-meds. We've got a very strong pre-med program. And if you want to go to the best medical schools, then you better do research as an undergraduate. That's just the way it is anymore. If you look at the top 10 schools that everybody in the world will claim, these are the best schools in America, period, bar none. Every one of them is also the number one school that a student wants to go to out of high school. And all of those are research universities. You know, you have to have both. You have to have, for a really excellent undergraduate education, you have to have really excellent research scholarship, because that keeps your faculty fresh. It keeps them, you know, pumping the right type of material into the room, and it keeps the students excited.
Well, Dr. Hyde, we'll look forward to seeing more about that in the weeks and months ahead, maybe visiting with some of your colleagues about some of these projects ahead on Baylor Connections on later programs.
Sounds great.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate your time.
Thanks for asking.
Thank you. Dr. Truel Hyde, Baylor University's Vice Provost for Research, our guest today on Baylor Connections. I'm Derek Smith. A reminder, you can hear this and other programs by subscribing on iTunes or go online, baylor.edu/connections.